This is 5 o'clock Shadow on the Pacifica Radio Network, originating at WBAI. I'm Robert Knight in New York, and our theme today is protection against unreasonable search and seizure. We'll be joined live by Ben Dornberg, who is the co-coordinator of the New York City branch of a national protest taking place on the 4th of July called Restore the Fourth. The Fourth Amendment. And also today we'll be hearing a wide range of organizations speaking about the NSA and domestic surveillance crisis. Welcome back to 5 O'Clock Shadow. I'm Robert Knight in New York. And today we continue our coverage of the unseemly ripping from the privacy of the affairs, the emails, the phone calls, communications, contacts, and connections of all of us, not just the 38 embassy offices at the United Nations and the European Commission that were monitored and bugged, not just the biometric data that Secretary of State Hillary Clinton ordered her employees to gather at the United Nations, not just the prospect for blackmail or malicious future prosecution on the selective release of information that is being gathered and maintained and analyzed and cataloged and documented at a new data center for the National Security Agency in Utah. We bring the conversation up to date with one of the latest revelations from the team at the Guardian newspaper, indicating that despite the cavils of defenders of the current administration, protectors of President Obama, who told the European community in its rage today that, well, spying is something everybody does and we're not going to stop. Well, spying is something Obama himself specifically, over and above the continuity of the Bush and Clinton administrations and others before them, has been doing against American citizens. The Guardian reports that for over 2 years, Obama has enhanced the collection of personal and private data on American citizens, reporting as follows. The Obama administration for more than 2 years permitted the National Security Agency to continue collecting vast amounts of records detailing the email and internet usage of Americans, according to secret documents obtained by The Guardian. The documents indicate that under the program launched in 2001, a federal judge sitting on the secret surveillance panel called the FISA court would approve a bulk collection order for internet metadata every 90 days. A senior administration official confirmed the program, stating that it ended, he alleged, in 2011. The collection of these records began under the Bush administration's wide-ranging warrantless surveillance program, collectively known by the NSA codename Stellar Wind. According to a top-secret draft report by the NSA's Inspector General published for the first time by The Guardian, the agency began, quote, collection of bulk internet metadata involving, quote, communications with at least one communicant outside the United States or for which no communication was known to be a citizen of the United States. Eventually, the NSA gained authority to, quote, analyze communications metadata associated with United States persona and persons believed to be in the United States, according to a 2007 Justice Department memo, which is marked secret. The Guardian revealed earlier this month that the NSA was collecting the call records of millions of American customers of the Verizon telephone and data service, et cetera, and so on. It is on this anniversary of the 4th of July that a very special event is taking place across the country. And in New York, there will be one of the cornerstones of the national demonstration taking place in Washington, and by now I suspect dozens of cities across the country. And we're very honored to have with us live in the studio Ben Dornberg, New York coordinator of the Restore the Fourth protest. What is to be restored?
So as you mentioned, what's to be restored is the Fourth Amendment. And for those of you who may not remember from your civics classes exactly what the Fourth Amendment is, that's the one that says that if the government wants to search your house or search your, in the words back then, search your papers, that they need a warrant. And it needs to be a warrant that's particular to you, and they need to have probable cause to believe that you've committed a crime. And so what we've seen with these latest revelations about the NSA's programs is that they're collecting information on everyone, just in case maybe in a few years, they want to go back and see, did you maybe talk to someone who they suspected something wrong? And so this is clearly a violation of the Fourth Amendment. And so the national movement of Restore the Fourth has three very simple demands, and they're very nonpartisan and simple to understand demands. The first one is that Congress should form a committee to investigate how we got to where we are and how it can be fixed and reveal that to the American public. And that would be in the footsteps of a committee called the Church Committee that was founded in the 1970s to address abuses under Nixon and previous administrations. The second demand is that the laws that govern surveillance should be made constitutional by explicitly prohibiting the bulk collection of information of people who aren't suspected of committing crimes. And the third demand is that the Director of National Intelligence, James Clapper, should resign for lying to Congress and to the American people at a hearing in March when he said explicitly that the NSA did not collect any type of information on millions or hundreds of millions of Americans. And as we've seen, that's a blatantly false statement. And so, as I said, it's going to be a grassroots, nonpartisan movement, and we are having rallies in dozens of cities across the country.
Where can people find out more about that? I do understand that here in New York, that part of your plans are to assemble at noon on the 4th of July at Union Square, a place of great progressive history, labor and banking and protection of workers as part of the tradition in that part of town. But you will also be marching to the birthplace of the Bill of Rights, no?
That's correct. So we'll be meeting in the southern part of Union Square Park and marching to Federal Hall, which is where the Bill of Rights was passed in 1789, which I didn't know. I assumed it was in Philadelphia, but I was incorrect. And obviously, that's a very symbolic destination. So the best place for people to find out more information would be to go to restorethefourthnyc.org. And that's F-O-U-R-T-H, not with the number, restorethefourthnyc.org. And that'll have all the information, and you can RSVP on Facebook if you want to be tracked.
For the benefit of our syndication and listeners in other parts of the country, where might people at a national level find out more about places other than New York?
Sure. So the site for the national group is restorethefourth.net. And again, that's F-O-U-R-T-H. But I think listeners all across the country should be hearing and seeing a lot about the movement in the near future, because there's a campaign going on by many of the largest internet sites to put up banners directing people to join Restore the Fourth, and that includes the very popular social site Reddit, the blog hosting site WordPress, the image hosting site IMGUR. I'm not sure how to pronounce that, but I share a lot of pictures from there. So there should be a lot of conversation on the Fourth about, you know, what I think the topic of discussion on the 4th of July should be, which is the civil liberties that make this country different from the British Commonwealth that it was before.
Well, this is the ground floor of a groundbreaking movement to restore the Constitution, consciousness, and protection of rights. And among the others, as I understand, co-participating in this national, perhaps global effort, are Stop Watching Us, of course, Restore the Fourth, but as well as kindred spirits from Mozilla, the open source web browser. That's a very important thing for the tracking of the NSA of our private communications. The Electronic Frontier Foundation, Color of Change, and the Freedom of the Press Foundation. That would be Daniel Ellsberg and associates, and many, many others, too many to be named at this moment in time. This is 5 O'Clock Shadow on the Pacific Radio Network. I'm Robert Knight, speaking with the New York Restore the Fourth coordinator, Ben Dornberg. And Ben, you say that there are three demands of this nascent grassroots protest to have Congress fix this. You mentioned the removal from office for perjury of the so-called Director of National Intelligence. Is he the one who actually said, well, I gave you the least untruthful answer? Is that him?
He wishes that someone else had given that answer. But yeah, that is General James Clapper.
Yes.
I believe that when I was in elementary school, when I told the least untruthful thing, I was also called a lie, and it generally didn't go over too well with my parents. So,
Well, one of the things that I find anticipatorily disturbing is the prospect for yet another constitutional violation above and beyond search and seizure Fourth Amendment. And that is the rule of law as it used to exist, or may not yet survive, of one's being protected from an ex post facto prosecution. Now, here now you have tens of thousands of individuals with various motivations. You have the collaboration and embeddedment of corporate interests who are working hand in hand with the NSA to perfect surveillance and espionage technologies. And you have malicious prosecutors, something that the late Bill Kunstler said was the most supreme problem of law in the United States. And what unanticipated violations of the Constitution might there be when somebody with a grudge decides to make these accumulated observations of us available to a corrupt prosecutor?
Sure. So that's an excellent question. I want to address that in 1 second. I just want to quickly note that the demands I mentioned earlier are the demands of the national group. Mm-hmm. In addition, the New York chapter is also demanding an end to stop and frisk and an end to discriminatory surveillance of Muslim Americans. So I think we should come back to those topics, but I just want to let listeners know in case they should have to leave for any reason before we finish talking about this topic.
Quite obviously, stop and frisk is, if nothing else, aside from a racist policy of Mayor Michael Bloomberg and Police Commissioner Raymond Kelly, it is also a part of the data valence system of today's America, in which more stops, arrests, and documentations of men and young people of color than exist in the city have now occurred. And in my estimation, the purpose of that is to tag them and bag them, to identify them, and to have future records by which they might be impeded in future social progress.
Sure. So I think that, to be honest, it's sometimes difficult for me to identify what the goal of stop and frisk is, because it doesn't seem to be very effective at stopping crime. It doesn't seem to be a very good model of community policing, to say the least. I think it's definitely a part of this surveillance infrastructure that we've talked about previously on the show. Mm-hmm. And I think that as the NYPD is now expanding their surveillance camera network from lower Manhattan to midtown Manhattan, and eventually, or maybe even already, I'm not sure on that, expanding its facial recognition capabilities. And you can read all about that online. That's not a conspiracy theory, although it does sound like one. It's definitely part of this larger web. To answer your question from earlier about the sort of after the fact tracking, I was actually at an event this past week where a NSA whistleblower named Thomas Drake was speaking.
Yes.
And part of his prosecution, so he tried to blow the whistle internally. He tried to play by the rules and let them know that not only were there unconstitutional surveillance policies in effect, but also he described massive waste and abuse and fraud in terms of wasting taxpayer money. And they raided his house at gunpoint after he decided to talk to a reporter about it when the internal channels didn't work. And they took documents out of his house. This is according to him, but I've read this other places. They took documents out of his house that were not classified. They retroactively classified them because they said they shouldn't have been declassified in the first place, and then charged him with crimes for distributing what was formerly unclassified information.
So it's ex post incommunicado.
Yes. So I think the notion that it's dangerous to have massive databases of everyone's behavior for the last 5 years or even longer, that the danger is clear. You can tell any story about anyone you want when you have every location to pick and choose through, when you have every email and phone call to pick and choose through. So I think you're right on the money there.
So it's not only what malicious accessors of this secret information might choose to selectively release. It is also exculpatory information they might choose not to release under this insane rubric of secrecy, top secrecy, which has been used under the control of a hypnotic word for crimes that are already defined on the books. And this hypnotic word is called terrorism. Speak to terrorism.
Sure. So this is one of the great controversies, actually, of the academic study of terrorism, is how do you define it? The classic phrase is one person's terrorist is another man's freedom fighter. Now, I certainly would not describe Al-Qaeda as freedom fighters. And I think that certainly many, many terrorists are guilty, as you said, of crimes that are already in the books.
But they would.
They would. And I think
they see foreign planes, they see drones, they see villages, they see tall men shot down because they heard that Osama bin Laden was also tall.
That's true.
That's terrorism.
So I think at the end of the day, I think the term terrorism is just not terribly useful. I think you have to look at what is, as you said, there are crimes already on the books. The surviving terrorist from the Boston bombing was charged with a weapon of mass destruction. He was charged with murder. Now, again, weapon of mass destruction, it's hard to define that. But murder, you can already go to jail for life or be executed for committing murder. Mm-hmm. I don't particularly see any benefit to creating a vague term to describe lots of different people acting with lots of different motivations. And so, you know, I certainly don't want to be quoted as defending, you know, terrorism. I just think it's not a word that has a whole lot of clearly defined meaning, and I think it clouds the issue rather than making things clearer.
You know, in one of the Sergio Leone movies, The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, there was a line that Clint Eastwood uttered to his sidekick. He said, in this world, there are people with guns, and there are people without guns, and that's why you have to dig, you know, to dig looking for the treasure. And I think one of the great schisms of society that is under-addressed is that America may well be beyond redemption in having created two distinct classes of people, those with passwords and those without passwords, those with access to information that controls other people, and those who are under control through surveillance about which they may not even be aware or of which they are as yet not concerned about the consequences it can have for them. Do you have any feeling or concern about the fact that there has been created a plutonic society in America, an underground, invisible caste of people with military, NSA, and intelligence access, and that the rest of us are chickens in a coop thinking we're free?
Sure. So I think, first of all, speaking as coordinator of Restore the Fourth, I feel very strongly that we're certainly not past redemption. I think, you know, to speak narrowly about this issue, I think that there are policies in place that we think are unconstitutional, and I think that they can be reversed. We've seen this, as I mentioned earlier, in the 1970s with the Church Commission. Mm. When things start to go too far, if people stand up and they object loudly enough, then things can change. So I do absolutely worry about what you're talking about, the creation of millions. You know, there's millions of people who have various levels of security clearance. Mm-hmm. And Thomas Drake, the whistleblower I was speaking about earlier, talked about what he said was sort of a psychological change that he sees happen in people's personalities. When you're talking to someone and you know something about them and they don't know you know it, that's the feeling of ultimate power. And he said that even people with the best of intentions, that, you know, does something to your mindset that's very hard to combat. And speaking to the damage one person can do, I think we've seen, I wouldn't call it damage, but Edward Snowden was one IT contractor. He wasn't even working directly for the NSA. And he was able, according to various reports, to download thousands of files, essentially everything that they had, and then cover his tracks to the point where they say they don't know what he has. If he was able to do that, what would another malicious IT contractor be able to get away with? And what about two senior officials working together? I think it's absolutely terrifying.
I wonder if it would be of any utility that, since it appears the momentum is very high for the creation of this NSA data center in Utah, and there is, as far as I can see, no perceptible intent to stop the spying or to destroy the data, then am I dreaming if I think that there ought to be a day where we share and share alike, and that the remedy for espionage is for the rest of us citizens to have the same information on the gatekeepers as they do on us?
Sure. So one thing we were thinking about doing as a promotional tool actually was offering some, you know, to make a donation of a certain amount of money to charity for every congressperson who would turn over the password to their emails and their phone records. We ran out of time to do that, but I am going to speculate that we wouldn't have had to pay out a single cent. Yeah, absolutely. I think that you see that anytime Congress is dealing with matters that affect them personally, you see things go very differently. So, for instance, insider trading. Insider trading is not a violation of the law if performed by members of Congress. And again, I know that sounds like a crazy conspiracy theory, but it isn't. And so I think, absolutely, if members of Congress start seeing repercussions from this, then you'll see change very rapidly. What I think people should worry about is the fact that if members of Congress were experiencing, say, blackmail or something else like that, we would never find out about it. And so I'm not saying that has happened. I'm not saying that President Obama is embarking on those kind of policies. But I think people need to think about what would have happened if Senator McCain had been elected and, God forbid, had some sort of heart attack. We would have had a President Palin. And what would President Palin have done with the capabilities of the NSA? Would you trust your safety and well-being to President Palin? I certainly would not.
It's my opinion that we already do have a Palin president. This is 5 O'Clock Shadow. I'm Robert Knight in New York, and that's Ben Dornberg. He's the co-coordinator of the New York branch of the July 4th protest called Restore the 4th. And information on the New York City flagship demonstration can be had at RestoreTheFourthNYC.org. And the national organization for people in cities other than New York is at RestoreTheFourth.net, isn't it?
That is correct. And we apologize for having a .net and a .org. We realize that's confusing.
The issue of Congress and the, in my opinion, not only the prospect, but the likelihood, if not of blackmail, but a fear for the potential of blackmail, is sufficient to put under my suspicion every member of Congress. And there are incremental cosmetic steps being proposed in Washington when they're not on vacation. For instance, Senator Patrick Leahy has a modest proposal that I think would attempt, without apparently visible enforceability, to attempt to put a half-life on the amount of time data is stored. But are you aware of that initiative?
Sure. So I think, as you mentioned, that's a pretty weak measure and certainly wouldn't go far enough to meet either my personal views or the demands of Restore the Fourth. And I think that often when these sorts of scandals come to light, what you'll see is an attempt to make a very minor change, which doesn't really address the root of the problem, but hopefully can sort of stall and, you know, people will lose interest in the meantime. And I think finally what you're seeing for the first time is on these issues of civil liberties and on freedom from as what really could be Big Brother, you know, the former head of the East German Stasi police is on record as saying that these policies would have been his dream come true. And so anytime you're assembling that, the idea that any sort of minor tweak is going to be sufficient, I think, is sorely missing the point.
On the issue of Congress, one of the most appalling things to me was as these revelations of NSA espionage, and I think we're well beyond the point where any electronic distinction can be made between domestic Americans or foreign people, that people who have presented themselves under the illusion of being liberal, Al Franken, Dianne Feinstein, many, many others, came out and with vicious attacks against the whistleblower, more of whom have been prosecuted under Obama than any other president in history. And it's an eerie thing that people elected to preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution, including the Bill of Rights, including the Fourth Amendment, including, I'd say, also the First Amendment, the right of free assembly, without the overriding fear of tracking and retaliation, that almost to a man and a woman, congressional leaders, in high contrast to the Church Committee hearings you referenced, the Church Committee being a precursor to what is now known as the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence, why have elected federal representatives sold the people down the river?
Well, I think as you identify, this is clearly a bipartisan concern. These policies, most of them were started under Bush. They had enthusiastic support from Republicans during Bush's term, and Democrats expressed horror and shock at these policies. And then President Obama was elected, and the latest poll numbers I've seen show that essentially Democrats and Republicans switched their views. It used to be about 60-40 in favor by Democrats and 60-40 in favor by Republicans under Bush, and now it's swapped, and the same thing for Democrats. So I think clearly people with power generally don't like to give it up. And if you look at the cost-benefit analysis for a politician, what they've seen is that no one is going to give them trouble for taking away people's civil liberties. They will get trouble if some sort of, you know, terrorist attack happens. And so the calculus for them up till now has been there's no downside for increasing security, so we may as well just give away everyone's constitutional rights. And so that's where groups like Restore the Fourth come in to provide the counterweight to that and say, no, you can't just give up our rights without asking us. That's unacceptable.
Well said, except for I'm trying to cut down on the use of the word terrorism, because the things that have driven America insane and caused so many to abandon the grace and nobility of our tradition of rights has been that awful word. And I really enjoy the depth and insight of this conversation. We're speaking with Ben Dornberg of the RestoreTheFourthNYC.org protest that will be kicking off at noon on July 4th, 2013 on the south end of Union Square Park, heading ultimately to the birthplace of the Bill of Rights at the Federal Center down near Wall Street, I believe.
Yes, so we have listed James Madison and Thomas Jefferson as sponsors of our event on RestoreTheFourthNYC.org, and we don't think they'll be able to make it, but we hope that everyone will come out and represent their views.
Well, they will be making noise to support it from the spinning in their graves of what's happened to the Constitution.
Well said.
This is 5 o'clock Shadow. Robert Knight here with Ben Dornberg. And can you give us a bit more perspective about what is happening on the national level? Later on in the program, we'll hear parts of a press conference with a wide coalition of organizations in support of the Restore the Fourth movement. But what would you say to people outside of New York?
Sure. So what I would say is go to restorethefourth.net, and you'll see there's a map, and you can find the protest nearest to you. Mm-hmm. I think as of now, there are 75 or maybe a few more than that protests scheduled for various cities. So the way it works is that there's a very loose set of coordinators at the national level who are essentially just trying to create some infrastructure for the local organizations to, run with the ball. But essentially, each local group has been planning this for the last few weeks, and people should know that this group is about a month old.
And amazing.
Right, but that's what you're seeing. I think that's one of the reasons why these surveillance policies are so destructive, is because the democratic and empowering potential of internet and social media and things like this is that you can create a nationwide movement in, I believe it's now 3 weeks. And we've already seen people who are maybe reluctant to, you know, sign a petition because they're worried that it's going to show up when they apply for a job. But so people should find the protest nearest to them. People are organizing on Facebook, on Twitter, on Reddit. I don't know if anyone's on Pinterest yet, but maybe you could post some pictures there and start that. Mm-hmm. So people should get involved at the local level. Yeah, absolutely.
I'm very much in admiration of the people power. One of the things that I really appreciate about this radio station, WBAI, is that it has a terrestrial broadcast system. And despite the pontificators who say, oh, the whole new world is the web and slab phones and texting and so on. This terrestrial FM broadcast signal is the one and only way people could learn about these things without being tracked.
That's an excellent point, although I wouldn't put it past the NSA to have devised a system. But no, I think you make a great point, and that's something that Restore the Fourth thinks is very important, is you have, I think what we are is the marriage of the online and the offline.
Yeah.
Purely online protest will never drive.
No. Actually, I organized a huge rally the other day. It had 500,000 clicks.
Oh, that's excellent. I don't know how you feed that many people, but that sounds exhausting. Yeah, I think, you know, there's a lot of criticism of what people call clicktivism, the idea that clicking on a petition or typing your name in is all you need to contribute. And I think people shouldn't be discouraged from taking action online because I think we do increasingly, for better or worse, live online, and online actions have repercussions. But I think that without the, you know, what they call online IRL or in real life, without the in real life component, you're just not going to see the kind of impacts that you will if you have thousands of people in the streets. And so that's where, you know, I totally take your point. People power, it's tough to get the full impact of people power online. You need to meet someone face to face and understand where they're coming from and why they decided to come out that day.
Ben Dorenberg, more question in the minute or two that we have left, and that is, what is your latest take on the international furor over the espionage, the sort of bait and switch of the British intelligence services collecting information from the United States and then handing it back, and, you know, the United States spying on even its first-tier allies and everybody else in the world. And it seems that, particularly in Germany, that you mentioned earlier, that there is a very strong consciousness about the similarities of Stasi, Nazi, and NSA. What is your ultimate assessment of the effects of the whistleblowing of people like Mr. Drake, who's been on this show, and Edward Snowden, and Julian Assange, and others?
Sure. Well, I think the first point that I want to make is that I think it's unfair, and I'm sure you weren't saying this, but I think it's unfair to credit the fallout to the whistleblowers. Ultimately, you know, the fallout is the fault of the people pursuing these policies and not the people who reveal them, which I'm sure. Right. So we agree on that. I think that remains to be seen. I asked Thomas Drake at an event a few days ago, how many more programs are there? You know, how much have we seen so far and how much remains to be seen? And he agreed with a congresswoman who had said that we had only seen so far the tip of the iceberg. He said there's lots more programs, and so I think we have a lot more to come, but I expect there to be very serious fallout, and I think we're already starting to see that.
Well, I want to thank you for being here with such insight and motivation. We're speaking with Ben Dorenberg, the New York City co-coordinator of Restore the Fourth. Go to the website restorethefourthnyc.org and come together in person, in spirit, in vitality to march to preserve the Bill of Rights July 4th at high noon in Union Square Park. And we'll wish you the best and be back with you after the event. Thank you, Ben.
Thank you so much for having me, and excited to see everyone there.
Ben Dorenberg, and I'm Robert Knight. This is 5 O'Clock Shadow. And for the national audience, the information in your locality can be gotten by going to restorethefourth.net. And we continue. Earlier today, your reporter took part in a national electronic press conference in which a number of organizations spoke on this issue and on the July 4th protests, among them Anna Wilmischer of Restore the Fourth and Kim Lehmuckel, the senior campaign manager of colorofchange.org, Rainey Reitman of the Electronic Frontier Foundation, one of the great research instruments of a progressive movement, Craig Aaron of the Free Press Organization, Harvey Anderson of Mozilla, the open source web browser designers, and actor John Cusack. And we now hear portions of that press conference from just a few hours ago.
Something that we're thinking about a lot is the devastating effect that the COINTELPRO program had on the civil rights movement and its leaders, and the necessity of electronic communication to modern organizing, and especially to the types of work that we do at Color of Change. So the original idea with COINTELPRO was that the FBI needed to root out communists, right, in the same way that we're sort of obsessed with rooting out quote-unquote terrorists today. And then that rapidly shifted into rooting out sort of whomever the FBI decided was disruptive to the social order at the time, and you have intensive targeting of the Black Panther Party, the NAACP, Congress for Racial Equality, the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, and you have the FBI bugging and blackmailing Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. and even urging him to kill himself. It was not that long ago that we saw revelations in New York and New Jersey, also in Michigan, where we had law enforcement and the FBI literally mapping the locations of every Muslim person, every Arab American person, or who the FBI thought was Muslim or Arab American, and it turns out that was based on some very flawed data collection. They were doing this under some kind of made-up idea based on stereotypes rather than actual analysis of who is a threat or what is behavior that indicates a threat. And the ACLU also found similar FBI profiling of Black folks in Georgia, and Black communities are, of course, highly aware of and sensitive to the problems that are inherent within the concept of profiling and the injustices that profiling breeds. The one issue we work a lot on is stop and frisk, and we've also seen how those numbers have shaken out. In 2011, the NYPD made more stops of young Black men than the entire population of young Black men in New York City. And it turns out that even though the rationale is to find guns, Black folks in New York are half as likely to have guns as the white folks that are stopped. So we see the problems with these theoretical rationale for the kind of data collection and profiling. We're absolutely opposed to it, and we're happy to be part of this coalition and pressure in Congress about the NSA.
Thank you very much, Kim. Next up, we have Anna Wilmisher from Restore the Fourth.
Thank you for having me on. Restore the Fourth is very young, at only 23 days old. It has started with a comment on a popular internet site. Within an hour, a small forum dedicated to that idea popped up. In just a few days, that idea had a name, a mission, and thousands of people behind it. Since then, we've grown exponentially with those initial definitions always in mind. A grassroots movement dedicated to fighting back against expanding governmental outreach and obstruction of our fundamental rights to privacy, not only as citizens of the United States, but as human beings. Within the movement, we are working to spread awareness of these issues to the American public and to let them know that they have a group that they can rally behind, someone who supports their beliefs on privacy. To do this, the movement has planned over 90 rallies throughout the entire nation, with the largest rallies occurring in New York City and Washington, D.C. Both rallies are expecting a turnout of over 1,000 people and major media coverage, plus support from organizations such as the Electronic Frontier Foundation and the Bill of Rights Defense Committee. These rallies were specifically chosen to take place on the 4th of July because, like the symbolic event July 4th celebrates each year, we stand for the same values that the founders of the U.S. fought for in gaining independence. On a personal level, I'm also connected with the state. I sell fireworks every summer to contribute to July 4th celebrations, which have long been a symbol of patriotism and pride in our nation. This year, however, it is important for us to put a temporary hold on these festivities so that we may fight for our rights as free individuals, much like the colonists did over 200 years ago as they attempted to win back the freedoms we're currently losing. Restore the 4th is perhaps the most pressing thing on my mind because the time to act is now. We can't sit around simply expecting these issues to resolve themselves, and our representatives certainly won't change on their own. In order to enact change, we must focus on specific legislation, and we must push our state's representatives to do what they are sworn to do when they took an oath of office, uphold the Constitution of the United States. These rallies, as well as our future actions of political outreach, we will show the American public that they have someone to stand with them in the face of the slow, steady eviction of their inherent rights. And together, we can push the federal government to do as best what is best for the American public. Thank you.
Thank you, Anna. Finally, we'll hear from John Cusack.
I'll be mercifully brief. I'm very proud to be on this call with all these people and to talk to everybody. To me, the question that I always thought about when I joined the Freedom of Press Board, and what I try to remember is I want to ask the question in context of all this entire episode, which is why are the red and blue kind of elites of state power and the establishment press so afraid of an informed public and the public's right to know. And the question I want to ask is, why do they keep changing the subject? I don't think it can be criminal to report a crime or an abuse of power. And the Freedom of Press Foundation co-founder Daniel Ellsberg argued that Snowden's leak could be a tipping point in America. And he wrote that there had not been in American history a more important leak than Edward Snowden's release of the NSA material, including his own leak of the Pentagon Papers. So the question then remains, have the establishment media been so co-opted by government access that they've lost any sense of proportionality? We have prosecution of whistleblowers at an all-time high. We have kill lists. We have drone assassination programs. We have people jailed without trial. The destruction of habeas corpus. We have secret courts, you know, FISA, that have been used and abused since the power grab and tragedy of 9/11. And now these revelations of spying on every citizen and perhaps every human being on the planet, the end of constitutional rights of American privacy. Now, these are not subtle facts, and yet what we hear about from the press is the alleged character defects of the whistleblowers. Now, that's the oldest bait and switch in the book, and, you know, we have to say that we're not morons. Fundamentally, these revelations need to be addressed. As Chris Hedges pointed out, this cuts to the very heart of one of the most important questions in a democracy. Will we have an independent free press that reports on government crimes and serves the public's right to know? To me, this scandal is about, and these crimes are about fostering an informed and engaged public. Mr. Snowden said that the motivation was to expose crimes, spark a debate, and let the public know of secret policies he could not in good conscience ignore. Now, whether you agree with his tactics or not, or whether you like him personally or not, which I find interesting because no one's met him, the debate's begun, and we're faced with a choice. We can either debate these things in the sunlight, or we can maintain the status quo and engage in character assassinations and have baseless allegations against journalists and try to criminalize journalism itself. So if these policies are just, I'd say debate them in the sunlight. And if the debate for transparency is worth having, we got to demand that it happens. The questions that I think this NSA scandal raises aren't going to go away, which is how long do we expect rational people to accept using terrorism to justify and excuse endless executive and state power? And again, why are so many in our government, our press, and our intellectual class so afraid of an informed public? Why are they so afraid of a free press and the people's right to know? I was taught by my parents and in my civics classes that it's the government's obligation to keep us safe while protecting our Constitution. To suggest it's one or the other is simply wrong. And I think if someone from the government does suggest that, they need to get out of the government. I grew up with Professor Jonathan Turley, a constitutional law professor, and he wrote a great article the other day. He said, Obama repeated the siren call of all authoritarian figures throughout history. While these powers are great, our motives are benign. So there you have it. The government is promising to better protect you if you just surrender this last measure of privacy. Perhaps it is time. After all, it was Benjamin Franklin who warned those who would give up essential liberty to purchase a little temporary safety deserve neither liberty nor safety. That's it. Thanks.
Thank you, John. I believe we have some questions from the press.
Hi, my name is Sadas. I'm calling from Politico. My question is for John. I wanted to know if you've spoken to any politicians yet about this, and what are your future plans and involvement? How else are you going to try and raise awareness?
Have I spoken to any politicians right now, active politicians?
Yeah, active politicians. Have you spoken to maybe your senator or representatives, ask them any more questions about the NSA program?
No, I've been actually working just with the Freedom Press Foundation to kind of raise awareness of it. I think there have been people, though, like Ron Wyden and Mark Udall and others who have been speaking up about this for a long time. So I think they're individuals who have been very public about this. No, I haven't spoken to any representatives from Illinois about this.
And do you have any further plans? Do you plan on attending any of the protests for Restore the Fourth?
Yeah, I think I may have to be in Toronto working, oddly, but if I can be before I travel, I'd like to go.
And finally, sorry.
Oh, I was just going to say that I also sit on the Freedom of the Press Foundation board. This is Rainey. And we are, among other things, releasing a white paper today that provides tools and advice for individuals, including journalists who are working with sources, to use encryption technology to protect themselves from NSA surveillance. So that's something that we've had in the works for a while that we're going to be releasing, in addition to supporting the ongoing rallies and efforts of the Restore the Fourth Movement.
Yeah, I often think, you know, this, so when you do talk to these, when I do talk to people in power or even in the media, it seems like privately they admit things that they don't admit publicly. And it's time, I think, that, I mean, these are not particularly subtle facts, these facts here. So I think it's time that people need to stand up and admit, say, well, okay, most rational people don't admit that the FISA court is a kangaroo court. It's there's no oversight, there's no checks and balances. And so they go on television and they repeat, well, it's legal, it's a federal court, but most people know that it doesn't fall within the checks and balances of the Constitution. So they need to say that on camera and not just off camera. And I think people need to be saying this in public. And these are core fundamental rights. This is so you know, I've brought it up with some people, but I think everybody needs to bring it up. And so I'm just trying to help put a spotlight on that. And through the foundation, through work with the foundation, help as much as I can.
Hey, this is Josh Levy from Free Press. I would just like to add that we at Free Press are setting up meetings across the country with constituents and their members of Congress to discuss this NSA spying issue. So in the next couple of months, we're going to see dozens of meetings going on where actual constituents are asking their members of Congress how are they going to hold the NSA accountable for these programs.
Your next question comes from the line of Daniel Tynan, IT World.
Thanks for holding this. This has been great. I appreciate you guys taking the time. I have a question. I think it's primarily for Rainey, and that is, I know EFF does a lot of lobbying with Congress, and they work really hard to get bills passed. What are you looking to achieve through this process? Are you looking for Congress to pass the Leahy bill? Do you have something more specific in mind? What would be the practical effect? What would cause you to call this a success?
So I actually want to say that EFF is not a lobbying group. We're not based in Washington, D.C., but we do a lot of grassroots lobbying. So we end up sticking our toe in Washington, but we are not one of those groups that's based there and meeting there with full-time lobbyists all the time. That being said, there are a whole, I'm sure you've been seeing it, there's just a whole bunch of bills that are dropping. And we're still in the process of analyzing whether or not one of them is going to do everything that we want it to. It seems to be a lot of political momentum behind fixing Section 215 of the Patriot Act. And that is what a lot of these bills are looking to do. That's certainly something we would support. And so that's definitely one tactic of resolving this issue that that we think not only would be helpful and beneficial to the American public, but also seems to have political support in Washington. Mm. That's not enough. I think we also believe that the FISA Amendments Act is going to have to get addressed in some form of legislation. I think that doesn't seem to have the same kind of political will behind it yet. But hopefully through these protests and this petition that we're running and the phone calls and the grassroots efforts, we'll be able to sort of push things in the right direction. And ultimately, we are looking to really see the surveillance system laid bare. The more information that is made public, that is confirmed by Congress through congressional hearings and testimony, the easier it is for us to ensure that the laws that are written are actually effective in stopping this kind of surveillance, and the easier it is for us to hold the government accountable for their practices in a court of law.
Your next question comes from the line of Jessica Bartstein, freelance writer.
I have two questions. The first is for anybody. I'm wondering what Stop Watching Us is doing about the bullying being done by the U.S. of other countries to prevent Snowden from getting asylum. And for John, I'm wondering what you think about the relative silence from well-known progressive candidates. We've heard some mumblings from Lou Reed, but where is Susan Sarandon and Sean Penn and Danny Glover?
This is Josh from Free Press. To your first question, I can say that as John mentioned, actually, we think that we need to continue to move attention away from Edward Snowden, the person, and toward the information that he has leaked, because it has raised many, many, many questions that need to be answered by the administration and by the NSA. So the Stop Watching Us Coalition is focused on those questions, and it's focused on NSA accountability and not on the person of Edward Snowden.
Yeah, I mean, you can see what happened. This is John. You can see what happened as soon as this revelation was revealed. That we've shifted the conversation to almost anything but what the revelation's there. So all the things that Rainey talked about, the FISA amendment bills, pulling back the Patriot Act, seriously serious reform on very, very serious policy issues. We don't want to talk about that. We want to talk about, MSNBC wants to suggest that Glenn Greenwald is not a journalist. He's too close to the story. Jeffrey Toobin wants to make everyone know that Snowden's a grandiose narcissist who deserves to be in prison. Mm-hmm. David Brooks wants everybody to know that it's Mr. Snowden, not the government, who's guilty of betraying everything from the Constitution to all notions of American privacy. You have David Gregory now famously going on and parroting an absurd position that Mr. Greenwald should be prosecuted for even committing the act of journalism. So I think we've really seen a debate about everything but the things that have been revealed.
But isn't the issue also about protecting whistleblowers and the press?
Well, yeah. What we found out is, that the Obama administration has prosecuted, and I think Rainey and Josh can back this up. They've prosecuted more whistleblowers than I think all the previous presidents combined. Is that right?
That's right. Yeah, that's true. But I do think that ultimately, this is a press freedom issue. This is an issue of, how is the public going to be able to stay informed about what their government is actually doing. That the purpose of this particular coalition is not to discuss, Edward Snowden's case, but to discuss the incredible revelations of domestic spying that were laid bare as a result of his actions. So the opportunity now is for us to use these new revelations to prevent the National Security Agency than engaging in unconstitutional dragnet surveillance of the American people. That's what we need to get done. I mean, that is the ultimate purpose of this coalition, and it's what we're calling on Congress to do. I think there's going to be plenty of interesting news reporting about Snowden's situations over the coming weeks and months, but that's not the hard labor we need to be doing in Congress to ensure that this type of fine is actually put to a stop.
This is 5 o'clock Shadow on the Pacifica Radio Network, where we have been listening to portions of a press conference held earlier today by the Free Press Foundation and attended by many different organizations, including Color of Change, Restore the Fourth, Electronic Frontier, Mozilla, and others. And I'd like to give thanks to Ben Dornberg, the New York City coordinator for the Restore the Fourth rally, information at restorethefourthnyc.org. And for other cities, go to the website restorethefourth.net. And finally, I'd like to say that today's program is dedicated to the loving memory of our late correspondent, Jim Creville, a true friend of the Shadow and inspiration to Pacifica. I'm Robert Knight.
And that concludes today's 5 o'clock Shadow. The program was engineered by Michael G. Haskins, Reggie Johnson, and Sean Rhodes. We welcome your comments, questions, leaks, and suggestions with an email to theshadow@wbai.org. And for 5 o'clock Shadow, I'm Robert Knight in New York.